Inside Black and Gold. One more segment here. We're getting closer, ticking, ticking, ticking closer to training camp. And we're going through the players with the most pressure on them heading into the 2024 season. We broke down kind of the lower end of the list. Now, this segment, we're going to be going into the top five players. And the first one, you know, it's kind of weird because this is a guy who has had really good showings each of his first two seasons. The pressure on him this year is to kind of take that leap into the star category at his position. And that's what you see with most star wide receivers is year three is when you really get that. Okay, we're talking peak performance here, right? And I'm talking obviously about Chris Olave. He's a guy who's caught a good number of passes. He's broken the 1,000-yard barrier each of his first two seasons, but both times he did not go into it as the number one option. And both times you kind of felt like there was more there that you did not untap quite yet. And so I think there's a lot of pressure on him to show like, no, I'm the this receiver room can be led by me. You do not need to feel like you need to go out and find your number one option because that is me. And you look at like some other star wide receivers, right? Like you look at Michael Thomas. He was really good his first 2 years. He really broke out in year three at 125 catches, 1,400 yards. And obviously year four was the 149 catch season. But it was year three where you were like, well, okay, yeah, this guy is the truth, right? Like we don't need to be shopping around for star wide receivers because we got one. You look at CeeDee Lamb, who is a player that I would compare Chris Olave to both in the kind of style and trajectory. And you look at CeeDee Lamb years one and two. He was kind of a 75 catch range, 1,000-yard range receiver. Year three, you're talking 107 catches, 1,359 yards, 9 touchdowns, and he just built upon that in year four. Tyreek Hill was a guy who, you know, had his biggest breakout in year three, and then you've kind of built from there. Justin Jefferson was a monster from day one, but even he, you know, on his own kind of trajectory, year three was when he had that like 120-something catch, 1,800-yard season. So even then, even for a guy who started as highly as he did, he really broke out in year three. So I think that's where I look at Chris and say, this is where, you know, as you kind of head into year four and then you're like, man, what kind of extension is this guy looking at with these massive contracts getting handed out? Like this is where the pressure is on him to deliver so that you go into year four not thinking, oh, does he deserve one of those big contracts? But man, how much are we going to have to pay this guy? So I think that there's a lot. And you got a new offense. You got an offense that should be a little bit more amenable to his skill set going into year two with the same quarterback. So there shouldn't be that learning curve that you had last year. And the fact of the matter is, like, the Saints need Chris to be that guy. If he kind of stumbles over his own feet and it just kind of, it looks like that 1,000-yard, 70-catch tier is closer to his ceiling than his floor, I think you're in trouble as a team. I think you're in trouble as an offense because I just don't know how you can compete at a high level if you don't have kind of that 100-catch, 1,400-yard, 10-touchdown guy as your top wide receiver in today's NFL. So that's why I put him on my list.
Yeah, I'm definitely hoping we've seen the floor basically of Chris Olave. Right. I definitely think he's can do a lot more. And there's no question you mentioned he is the number one guy at wide receiver this year. No Michael Thomas around. Obviously, Rashid Shaheed, number two guy. And a lot of questions, obviously, after that. But with Olave, yeah, there was a little bit of disconnect, I guess you could say, with him and Derek Carr last year. Hopefully that can get more on track. And it's going to be a big question, though, too. How is everything going to fit in this new-look offense? There's a built-in excuse, obviously, it being year one of the Clint Kubiak system. But seeing what was able to transpire with the San Francisco 49ers and the success they were able to have there, like a guy like Brandon Ayuk, I think we're just seeing the base of what Olave can do. And hopefully, yeah, a heck of a lot more in store for this season. I agree. Year three has to be massive for him going into that fourth season. Like you said, going not, oh, crap, is he worth the money? Go, it's more like, oh, no, how much are we going to have to pay him?
Right. And I just think for the from the offensive perspective of, you know, if you end this season looking at Chris as like he's an elite number two, but he's not a number one, then that's a problem.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And you're kind of back to the drawing board from an offensive perspective because you're just like, okay, where do we find that number one guy? They're not easy to, you know, they're expensive. You gotta a lot of times you can't sign them. You gotta develop them. You gotta draft and develop because those second contracts are so expensive that I just don't I don't know.
QB money is becoming wide receiver money now.
But yeah, wide receiver money now is what QB money was like 3 years ago. Anyway, okay, number four. And this is for a completely different reason, but it's Juwan Johnson. And, you know, he's not that far into his career that you would say like he's in a completely different category than Chris Olave, but he is in the situation that he is on another, like he signed an extension. He is now in the second year of that. I wouldn't call it a particularly lucrative extension, but it's a high level extension for a guy who was a UDFA and converted from wide receiver to tight end a couple of years earlier. It was a 2 year, $12 million deal, and it represented a reasonably significant investment in Juwan as, okay, he's no longer just an option at tight end. He is the tight end. He's the starting tight end. And he just didn't deliver on that last year. And whether that was due to injuries, whether it was due to just not being on the same page with the quarterback and it took some time, you got to deliver this year. I don't think you're going to get another kind of failure to launch season the way you had last year and then retain that and not have the team feeling like we got to go find another option at tight end. Now you have Dallin Hulker, who you feel like could maybe develop into something, but you know, and this team has not shown a proclivity to invest heavily at the tight end position. They never have. You know, even the great tight ends. You know, you're talking about Jimmy Graham as a third round pick. It's not like you spent a really high asset on him. You know, and Adam Trautman, you traded up, you got him as a third round pick. That obviously didn't work out, but like that has been the ceiling of the investment that the Saints have been willing to make outside of bringing in some veterans like a Jared Cook or a Kobe Fleener. So
yeah, it seems like a position that's been pretty neglected.
I don't know about neglected, but like every few years they feel like they have to reinvest in the free agent market because they have not developed a player.
Right.
And this is Juwan's year where he either has to show that he is that guy or you're back in that kind of cycle of like, okay, who's a free agent we can go get? Cause I don't know if they're going to change their draft strategy, but you know, Juwan at the end of the 2022 season, you felt like, okay, he's a guy who should kind of emerge, and he didn't do that. And you saw over the final month of the season that there is that capability there. And I think the way the offense prioritized the tight end position in the red zone, right, in particular, between he and Taysom Hill with a lot of touchdowns in the final month of the season, I think you can get back to that. So I think there is the ability, but he's got to do that. He's also got to prove he can stay healthy. And right now he has not done that. You know, we'll see how much time he misses in training camp, because it sounds like he's going to miss at least some time. And I don't know what you would do if he's not ready. Cause you know, there's just not a lot of faith I'm going to have in a rookie in terms of rookies make mistakes. It's what they do. It's why you don't want to rely on rookies.
You're going to rely heavily on Foster, I guess.
Yeah, well, we're right. Do you end up in a situation where the only guy you trust is Foster Moreau?
Right.
And you know, no disrespect to Foster, I just think he's limited in terms of as a pass catching tight end. You know, like and I wouldn't say he's a elite blocker. He's a solid blocker. He's good enough, but he's not a guy I would look at and be like, oh yeah, that's the top end blocking tight end either. So it's you end up in a situation where your tight end position is, you know, more of a liability than a strength. So it's on Juwan. Like Juwan's got to deliver. And this is kind of his, you know, Ed, like he's on that final year of that contract. They didn't extend him. They didn't restructure him. So we got to do it.
Yeah. We're seeing a nice steady climb from Juwan. And then last year, it just kind of fell apart for him. Hopefully this year is a season where he can get back, to being that more reliable presence, especially in the red zone. 2022 looked like he was heading into the last season with a lot of promise, and it just didn't end up turning it out that way. And not the greatest start, obviously, for this season. Like you mentioned, we don't know how much camp he's going to miss with his current injury. Hopefully it's not too much time, because yeah, I feel like he's going to be an important cog in this offense because of the limitations they do have at tight end.
Yep, no question. All right, moving forward, and this is a weird one. I debated where exactly to put him on this list, but number three for me is Marshon Lattimore. And you know, again, like there's a lot of different types of pressure here, but for Marshon, it's not going to be a situation where he can really prove anything in camp. like we're not going to watch him in camp and be like, oh yeah, I have no question about what he's going to be able to do. It's going to be, can you stay healthy? Can you get on the field? Can you compete at a high level consistently and not just in the matchups that you circled on your calendar, right? Can you be, you want us to call you the top cornerback in the NFL? Well, to be the top cornerback in the NFL, you got to be it every week, not just 8 of 14 weeks, right? Like you got to be available and you got to do it week in, week out. And I'm hopeful that's what you see. Now, I look at this season as kind of, you're going to have to pick one, I think, in terms of, are you going to move forward with Marshawn? Are you going to move forward with Adebo as your top corner? Now, the ceiling for Marshawn, way higher than what you would get with Paulson. Paulson's 3 years younger, but what you've seen from Paulson is a more consistent baseline, at least over the last several years, of like, this guy doesn't miss games, really. Like, he's had a couple injuries, but generally speaking, you know what you're going to get from Paulson. I don't know what I'm going to get week in, week out from Marshawn. And I think that's the pressure this season is, you know, they're not going to just give away Marshawn for nothing this year. I think there's a chance you go into next season and you're like, we're going to extend Paulson and we're going to get what we can get for Marshawn if he doesn't go out this season and deliver at a high level. He's only 28. Like, he's not ancient. Like, you could make the decision, okay, we feel like the replacement level guys are going to give us what we can get out of Paulson, and we're going to continue with the top end corner that we have and that we have faith in. But he's got to show that investment makes sense. And you know, to his credit, he's said all the right things. You know, he doesn't talk a lot, but when he has talked, obviously, I think he's been in the right frame of mind. You know,
he's like genuine.
I'm not questioning whether he means what he says.
Right.
But I do think that he's questioning to some extent the commitment of the team to him. So I don't know. We'll see. You know, we have to see, like, when things aren't going great, how does that kind of mentality stay? But either way, that's why he's number three on my list because of that. Because I think if you get another season like you did the last two, then you're just going into an offseason and, you know, it doesn't make sense for them to take kind of that low level trade package this year. I think it will next year. I think you will be in that situation where if you don't think that this is the option, you're not going to force it. You're going to find a way to
get what you can. Move.
Yeah. And so, like, that's kind of where I'm at. And I don't think the pressure's on Adebo. I think, you know, what, again, you know what you're going to get out of Paulson, and it's on Marshawn to be like, okay, no, this is me. I'm still that guy.
Yeah, and Alante is just waiting for his turn to, you know, play on the outside.
Right. And again, like, that's why, like, I put Alante lower than Marshawn, because I think Alante is kind of like, hey, I know I can play on the outside.
Right.
It's really just a question of whether I can play in the slot. And I do think they'd like to get Alante on the outside. It's just, you know, you don't draft a guy in the second round with the goal of playing him out of position. And so, yeah, well, we'll see. But I think, like, if Marshawn comes out and is that number one guy, is that top five corner that we all know he can be, that is like the pressure is on Marshawn to make this decision going into next season incredibly difficult. And I think he's
got to live up to his own hype.
Exactly. Going forward, we have two more, and this is the two players with the most pressure on them heading into this season. And now the obvious pressure is on the quarterback. You know, and so this is obviously Derek Carr. I think any team you would have the quarterback toward the top of, like, this is the player with the most pressure on them. Pat Mahomes is going to have some of the highest pressure, even doing what he's done. He has to go out and prove it every year. You know, the NFL stands for not for long, right? Like, even if you are performing at that high level, you're going to have a ton of pressure on you to be consistent and do that again. With Derek, I think it's different because his pressure is also connected to his head coach. Like, I don't know what happens if you move on from Dennis Allen and you bring in a new coach. Do they stick with Derek Carr? I don't know. Maybe they might not have a choice. But at the end of the day, you know, this idea that there is a connection and they're like the fates of Derek and Dennis are tied together, I think that's true. I really do. And so there is pressure on Derek not only to perform at a high level, but like if he doesn't, and you end up having to reset the deck, who knows where they go from here? Who knows if that's the last opportunity he gets as a starter in the NFL? So there is pressure. There's a ton of pressure. Now, you look at his first year with the Saints and you look at the final numbers and, you know, you kind of are at your career's averages. Like, that's the weird thing about his first year is, you know, you're talking about 3,500 plus yards, 25 touchdowns, nearly 70% completions, under 10 interceptions. On its face, that's not a bad season. And I think, again, we talked about this, the relative just animosity toward Derek is at least in part because people don't like that coach. That said, you watch it play out and you can appreciate that the stats themselves are not necessarily telling you the full story because there were consistency issues. He made up a lot of that gap over the final 6 weeks of the season. And that gap was there to be made up because of the inconsistency, particularly in the red zone over the first 10 weeks of the season. Then you can point to injuries, you can point to whatever. There's pressure on him to show that the final half of the season is the real Derek Carr. And the first half of the season was kind of a guy kind of finding his way in a new with a new team and a new system with a new set of receivers with a new cast of characters with a suspect offensive line. So here we are.
You said it great there. And obviously that suspect offensive line is continuing into this year.
Yes, yes. And that's a little foreshadowing here. But, you know, it's got to be on the quarterback. It's always going to be on the quarterback. It's the most important position in all of sports. Like, I can't think of another position in any sport that has more pressure on it just fundamentally than the quarterback of a football team. It's just the fact of the matter. So
I guess you could put it kind of equivalent to a starting pitcher.
Yeah, but you only pitch one every 5 days.
Right. That's the thing. Yeah. You only have that pressure once every 5 days.
If you had five different starting quarterbacks and you only had to perform well one day of the week,
You
only have to perform one day of the week. You get the idea. But I mean, they play 16 games, so everything's amped on that one game. Now, for Derek, too, it's twofold. It's you need to be consistent throughout the regular season, but you know, there's a level of sketchiness that comes with a quarterback who's never won a playoff game. You know, and you can argue that it's circumstantial. You can argue that, okay, when you play with a bad defense for that long, your chances of winning playoff games aren't great. You can argue accurately that his best chance to win a playoff game was in the season that he broke his leg in week, 17, right? Like, that was the Raiders' best team. They were a legitimate playoff team. They didn't back in. Like, his only playoff start, they had to win their final four games, I think, to get in the show, and they lost to the Bengals in the first round. So, like, you know, that's a tough one. Whereas the year that was their best chance to make a run in the playoffs, they got a home game, you know, they lost to the Texans with a backup. So it's not a scenario where you look at it and you can say, well, he's never gotten there. He has gotten there. It's been difficult. That said, you can only make excuses for a guy so long before that's just what your career is you never got through in the playoffs. Daniel Jones has won a playoff game, right? like Kirk Cousins has only won one playoff game, but it was a game we all remember, you know, you gotta be that guy and you gotta prove you're that guy. And maybe you are that guy, but until you show it, I don't believe it. So we'll see. Either way, like, if it's going to happen for him, it's got to happen soon. Like, if you're going to break through, it's not going to happen in year 16 for the first time. Like, year 11, is it year 11? I think it's year 11 for him. Like, if it's not going to happen now in a weak NFC South with, you know, a team that's committed to you fully, when is it going to happen? So that's where the pressure is. Like, you got to have that defining moment, and it's got to happen soon because I don't know how many more chances you're going to get.
No, I wouldn't argue with you if you had Carr number one, because like you mentioned, that QB position is just so damn important in the NFL. We see the likes of, obviously, a Patrick Mahomes doing what he does. He makes it look effortless, but it sure ain't.
I had him number one initially, and I changed it because, like, I do think that, you know, there were some things that he was able to get off his plate at the end of last year in terms of that final month of the season really helped assuage some of the serious concerns of, like, where is this guy? Like, where is the guy that we expected to see? Because we did see it. Well, over the final month of the season, you saw the quarterback that you expected early in the season. He was healthy. He was taking advantage of his weapons. The Saints were winning football games. There was obviously the hiccup in LA, but that was about the entire team. It wasn't just about Derek. So that helped. And I think that kind of gives me a little bit of confidence that, like, okay, we can take some of that off of him and put it on other people. and that's why I put this guy at the top. And I don't think it's unfair at all to say it's Trevor Penning at number one. He's like the player on the Saints with the most pressure on them to not only prove that they can start, but prove that they can be an NFL player is Trevor. And, you know,
it's kind of disturbing when the team's already talking about a fresh start with him and we haven't seen really any start from Penning.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, so the excuse that you can make, the reasonable excuse is, okay, he didn't have an offseason before his year two. You know, year one, when you're kind of just trying to get your feet under you, you dealt with an injury right before the start of the season. You got back late in the year, you finished the year with an injury. And the question is, man, okay, are you injury prone? Are you not able to hack it from an injury perspective? You didn't have an off season. You spent it all rehabbing. You came back and they threw you in before you were ready. And what player is going to be like, I'm not ready, don't play me. Right. So you got to put that at least somewhat on the coaching. There's a new coaching staff in there now. There's a new offensive line coach. There's a new offensive coordinator. There's a new just about everything on the offense. So you now have some tape you can work off. You started 5 weeks. You got 5 weeks to you know, use that as teach tape and get better. You're on the right side of the line, okay? Like, you're giving you your chance. They're saying, we are not going to hold that against you. We are going to hope you learn from it and you improve. Those excuses don't exist now. You have had an entire offseason, and you've got to deliver and be a serviceable starting right tackle. If you are not, if you cannot get it done this year, your only option left is to be kind of an emergency, let's see if he can hack it at guard. You become Eric Flowers, right? Like, that's who you are as a player. And then there's some pressure there, right? Like, because you can't just say, hey, we're going to help Trevor every play. You can't say, like, hey, we're going to throw the tight end over there because we can't trust him. Because you also have a rookie left tackle. You have to be the consistent tackle on the right side because you know the rookie's going to be a rookie. He's a rookie. That's what he is. Rookies make mistakes. Rookies struggle. Rookies learn on the job. You can't play like a rookie on the right side and also have a rookie on the left side. So that's the pressure, like, because you're going to want to help Talia. Say you're going to want to bring him along and get his feet on the ground early in the season. And so you need some consistency on the right side because they are not going to just put their, you know, like teams don't just put their star pass rusher on the left anymore. They move him around. Like, you are going to have to deal with guys one-on-one. And how he handles that, particularly early in the season, like, if he's a turnstile, you're not going to get very far this season, right? Like, if the offensive line cannot keep Derek Carr on his feet, and that's part of the reason, like, you can put all the pressure on Derek Carr, but if he's running for his life constantly, you're not going to have success, and it's not going to be about Derek. It's going to be about the offensive line. So the pressure is going to be on the line to give Derek a chance. Now, no one will be happy with Derek if he's, you know, peeling himself off the turf constantly. But if that's the case, and your only option is kind of the three-step, get the ball out and hope for the best all season long, then there's really nothing that you could have done differently at the quarterback position to do that. So that's why Trevor is at the top of my list. But Trevor is really more indicative of the group as a whole. You know, like, Trevor is kind of the most glaring concern on an offensive line that's littered with concerns. So we'll
see. That's a fact, for sure. No, what's, I guess, scary for me about Penning is we saw last year, even with injuries, that coaching staff had no confidence in putting him into games. We'll see. If you mentioned, obviously, it's a whole new cast and crew leading the way for the offense and offensive line. So hopefully they can do something to reignite that fire in Penning, because we kept hearing what a nasty mole this guy was and just hasn't been a presence for this black and gold squad yet.
Yeah, I think to some extent that year two should have been kind of a wake-up call of, like, you know, if there was work you weren't doing, go friggin' do it. Like, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't want to question a guy's work ethic, but, like, Doug Marrone didn't like him. You know, like
it seems that way for sure, right?
There's no way that that relationship was a good one. So how do you kind of fix that, right? Like, I hope he's just kind of a pest in John Benton's ear. I hope he's a pest in his teammates' ears. I hope he's constantly there and understanding that, like, if you were ever going to put in that extra work, it's got to be now. And so we'll see. Again, like, he didn't have this opportunity last year, right? Like, this time of year, we were still talking about, okay, is he going to be there at the start of training camp, or is he going to be dealing with that foot injury, that rehab into camp? He was there on day one. He was healthy. He, like, we aren't sitting here talking about, okay, can he stay healthy? He was healthy. You know, obviously it's a little easier to stay healthy when you aren't playing for 11 weeks, but he stayed healthy for that first 5 weeks, right? Which is something he had not done previously, is play an extended period of games. So he did, you know, that's a positive. You can look at that as a positive, where we're not sitting here talking about, oh, can his feet hold up at all? Because, like, he had injuries to both feet in his rookie season. So we'll see, but that's, you know, we're not going to know, like, and we can talk about it all throughout camp. We're not going to really know until the season gets here. And when we see it in games and we see him trying to, I guess in those joint practices, when he has to line up against Nick Bosa, and we'll have an idea of, like, is he going to run in terror? Is he going to be sprinting, trying to save the quarterback's life? You know, that sort of thing. But that's no, it.
Those joint sessions are going to be quite entertaining, obviously, for a number of reasons, but man, oh man, to see how a guy like Penning stacks up against that San Fran pass rush will be one to watch. And man, I know there's definitely a lot of questions about just in general the Saints scouting department with these offensive linemen of late.
Well, I mean, really only one.
Caesar? There's been a lot of question about him.
He's been consistent. I mean, I'd say he's the best interior lineman from that class. No, I don't know. Like, the only real whiff to this point has been Trevor, you know, like Andres. I feel like, you know, while he didn't necessarily keep people happy, he was just, what, a 3-time Pro Bowler. Like, he's been a decent player. He delivered when you were asked him to play left tackle. So you can't get too mad at that. Eric has been a really, really good player. Right. We don't know about Saldivar yet. So, you know, that might change my tune a little bit if he can't hack it. But to this point, it seems like they're confident that he'll be able to play. So I don't know. We'll see, right? Like, if Trevor turns a corner this year and suddenly he looks like a serviceable tackle, then wouldn't we be looking at it and saying, man, they've really nailed all these draft picks on the offensive line?
Then everyone will just be carrying torches for Doug Marrone.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hope it was all Doug.
Yeah, it's Doug all his fault.
And, you know, even Landon Young, I think, has been a serviceable draft pick. He was a 6th-round pick and he's started games for you. He's a consistent player. So we'll see, right? Like, but when it's that 1st-round pick and you miss and you follow that up with like a Peyton Turner pick, or you're following up a Peyton Turner pick, then it becomes really, really painful to talk about. So,
yeah, but to me, O line and defensive end have been rough
in the first round. Yeah. and we'll see with Isaiah, but yeah, when I think it was Scott Shanley who mentioned this, it's like, you know, those are tough positions to draft, but when you miss on them early, when you miss on big guys early in the draft, it really sets you back, because not only are you not getting that impact from them, you're constantly trying to find someone who can make that impact, and they're very difficult to find. Usually they're expensive, and you're trying to sign someone off in the free agent market who is kind of a wild card. You don't really know. Right. And then, you know, you end up with a Larry Warford, and, you know, where it's tough. So we'll see how that
shoot goes. I'll take a Larry Warford at this point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you need a tackle, but either way, yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, that 2018, I think we all talked a lot of shit about that 2018, 2019 offensive line group when it was happening. Like, no one would ever shut up about Andres Pete, this and that. And now you look back and be like, man, if only we had that 2019 offensive line, man. Oh, man, Larry Warford getting put on skates.
It'll be the biggest question, obviously, for this season, I think, overall, is that O-line.
Agreed-o. Yeah. But all right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Inside Black and Gold. Thanks, everyone, for hanging with me. We're getting close. Start of training camp. I think I fly out on the 22nd,
and then we will be all going. You know, it's going to be like training camp for me. I won't have any distractions. Like, I won't have to walk my dog. I won't have to do anything. So it'll be kind of nice. So I was thinking about that. I was like, man, training camp is usually a real slog because it's like, I got all this other stuff to do. I kind of feel like I'm a part of the team in the sense of like, they want to get the team away from all their distractions. Like, what am I going to be distracting myself with? I'm going to have to like force myself to not work and do other stuff while I'm there. So
the toughest part for me for those Greenbrier years was definitely just being away from family. That's it.
Yeah, but they don't even like me. I'm already away from family. It's only my wife. Well,
the wife. I meant, like, for me, it was the wife and kid.
Yeah,
and for you, it'll be the wife and dog.
Claire's gonna get so mad when she has to walk that dog every day. But all right, thanks everyone for watching. We'll be back to you later in the week. One of two things: we either do a live mailbag, which we've been promising forever and have yet to do. I blame Steve though, because Steve got sick and we were gonna do it last time, and so I bailed. But we'll do that, or we'll do the position. We'll figure it out. It's more of a time crunch issue. But we'll get back to you with a second episode this week, and we'll getting closer to training camp. Thanks everyone for listening. I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Steve Geller. You can hit me up on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. You can hit Steve up at Steve Geller WWL, or the show at Saints_Pod. Who dat? Go Saints.
Hope your AC is cold, everyone.
Easy, y'all.
Peace.